Guys? 1 hour. 1 hour, okay. So maybe I'll get through this a little bit quickly so we can get more back from the Master of Salt. So... this is not going well. This is a bit of a disaster. Whatever's happened there. Okay, so these are my experiences and my opinions, and I expect contradictions from whenever I'm wrong from salt experts. Please, please interrupt. I'm happy to take questions anywhere through this talk. So this is usually one of those philosophical questions that's difficult to answer, but I think today it's reasonably easy. It's because automation is very, very important. I've worked in quite a lot of big data centers and in that sort of community. And frankly, without automation, life is seriously, seriously monotonous. You spend your entire time doing the same thing over and over again. And I used to know a really fast, effective sysadmin. But when he was setting up 20 machines, he did sit there and make a lot of human errors. And when I was working in the scientific computing field, we did roll things out on the scale of 1,000 machines regularly, every day. And our standard attitude to whenever things went wrong was just reinstall the machine and see if it happens again. I know it sounds a little bit evil. I know it sounds a bit Microsoft. It sounds even more evil to just reinstall the machine. But it's a really good recovery strategy. So many Heisenbugs disappear this way. So don't forget about these core reasons for why you want to automate. And if you're not automating, ask yourself, can I not invest some time to actually get round to doing it? So I'm kind of curious about this audience. This is the first time I've come to an OpenSUSE event, and I've never dealt with an OpenSUSE audience before. And I was a little bit scared when the previous speaker sat there and got a 60-40 split with the audience. So here's my questions. How many of you actually know everything I've shown on the previous slide? Please raise your hand. Yeah, okay. And how many of you are sysadmin? Okay. And how many of you are a DevOps person? The numbers are getting slightly smaller. And how many of you are a data center manager? Oh, one or two. And how many of you are developers? Oh, it seems to be one of the bigger groupings in the audience. Thank you. And how many of you already use Salt? Fair few of you. And how many of you have already used or already use Puppet? Yeah. And we'll go for the same for Chef. Yeah, I'm actually surprised how few Chef is, because I usually think it's much bigger in Germany than most other countries. Ansible. Yeah? Okay, thank you. It's just kind of interesting to look at the audience, because I realize there's quite a lot of people who've been in this area before. So after having asked the audience all these things, I'm going to ask a bit, I can tell you a bit about me. I'm working for SUSE on the project called Ceph. This is my third distributed storage project. I've done some others, and sometimes I'm really bad at spelling. Sorry, guys. I've been working on mass deployment for years and years and years and years, and sometimes it gets frustrating. And I like making admins happy. They're nice people when you make them happy. They can be horrible when you don't, so make admins happy. Make your life better. Let's move on. So I'm going to possibly upset the Salt guys who authored Salt here by saying some controversial things and comparing things. Please correct me if I'm wrong, because you probably know better than me here. And I hope I'm not too controversial. So I'm now going to say something that they're not a new idea. An old friend of mine from the past sat there and showed me a talk 30 years ago where he was replacing one configuration management system with another configuration management system. And here's where I'm a bit worried about being shot down by such experts in the room, but I think most configuration management systems do the same thing. And most of what they're doing is the same. They manage state on a lot of computers, and they take a booted operating system from a booted operating system into a running service. And that is wonderful, and I don't like using this word awesome, but it's awesome. Yeah, so I'm going to jump forward now and say that they're all a bit the same, these configuration management systems. They're made up of a bunch of reusable modules. They have a domain-specific language that allows you to hook up these modules. And these libraries or modules, you can express dependencies, include other ones of these configuration files, express branching. Then there's a kind of like another level where you have metadata about your machines you're managing. And then you can query this in the domain-specific language. All of this is pretty much common to all configuration management systems, and that's a good thing. It's a tried and tested pattern. And now I'm going to say 90% of what you do with a configuration management system. So sorry, the majority of you who know this stuff or have experienced this stuff, but I think we need to set down some baselines for some people and bring things up, particularly since I've got a whole hour, but maybe I'll cut down my talk a little bit shorter. So this is my interpretation of 90% of what you do in a data center. You give your machines in your data center roles. So here's my personal home top SLS file from my personal home salt system. Heidenstrasse just happens to be the street I live on, so I put some configuration into my street. I happen to be playing with Ceph, and so I've got a kind of like mess of different Ceph modules that I've been playing around with, and here's my betas. I do quite a lot of stuff with Jenkins, so I have a Jenkins artifacts and Jenkins swarm. And there's a whole bunch of stuff that I kept private from you guys because I don't want you to know about it. Anyway, so I assigned a bunch of roles to a bunch of machines. And then probably the next most important thing, your sort of second thing that you want to do, in fact, you might even want to do this before, is I want to say, I want to put this file on this machine. Or actually, I want my public SSH key on every single machine. There are other ways to do this in nearly every configuration management system, but hey, let's get really basic and put a file here. Here's an example of doing it in an SLS file with salt. I can't remember exactly what managed means. I'll maybe defer that one. But the important thing here is I'm expressing a salt URL. So in /server/salt, I have a subdirectory OSCEF. I wouldn't sing Ceph. And I put my ceph.conf in here. I set users, groups, modes, and make the directories. And then when I apply the SLS file that contains this magic, magically, that file appears on all of my machines. Wonderful. Never need to write that file and copy it and SCP it and rsync it again. And it's repeatable. And I can chuck up a virtual machine and have it there as well. Lovely. The next most common thing you'll do with the configuration management system is say, hey, machine over here, I want these packages installed. Again, Salt has a nice special module here, PKG, to say, hey, I'm going to install the Ceph monitor RPM and the Python Ceph configuration RPM. Done. And then the third, and I think the final of my basic, these are the things you need to do to get you started with configuration management systems, is starting a service. Now, I don't know how many of you care about systemd versus systemv versus BSD init versus upstart versus whatever, but some people really care about this stuff, and I'm going to sit there and pretend I don't care at all. And I've got a couple of operating systems, so it's really nice that Salt sits there and hides which init system I'm dealing. So I don't need to know whether I'm dealing with an old SUSE system that works with systemv or a new one that works with systemd. Working with my Debian systems, my CentOS systems, my Scientific Linux systems, I really don't care. That's Salt's job. That's the job of a configuration management system. Wonderful. So, then there's the other 10%, which takes all the time. That 90%, you will get a long way in running your data center there. But there's also these things of dependencies between packages, conditionals that you might want to sit there and install this package on this machine in this setup. There might be special modules that are needed. So, things like virtual env or Apache, or cron, might have special modules that make it easier than dropping a text file and running a command. And then we get to making your own modules. And that's actually the focus of this talk, but I really didn't know where people were and wanted to bring everyone up to the same speed. So we'll get there eventually. Now, I'm going to jump through this a little bit because I don't really dare compare configuration management systems with the author here. So I'll just sit there and say that Puppet is these days the biggest of the big four. And it's been around for a while. It's based on Ruby. And there's Chef, which I thought was much bigger in Germany, so I'm surprised that the audience hasn't seen it before in greater numbers. One of the things that I found a bit surprising, I'm not an expert in Chef, is it does completely rely on polling from what I read. I have friends who work with Chef, can't really say much more. Ansible is very much agentless, and to me that misses out a lot of the fun and games of what I want to do with a configuration management system, but we'll get to that maybe later in one of the more advanced talks. But what I do like about Salt is, forgive me, I'm unashamedly biased towards Python. So I quite like that about Ansible, and it's got a great test suite. Everyone I speak to says Ansible is excellent in its release management and testing. Salt, compared to the other CMSs, I think it's the youngest major player of the big four. I think they've all eclipsed CF Engine. When CF Engine moved to version 3, it lost a lot of users. It has got quite a steep learning curve. I wasn't very happy with the documentation initially, but it's definitely improving. There are lots of components. It became a little bit confusing when I first came to it, what components do what. But actually, my short summary of what you should know gets you 90% of where you need to go nearly every time. It seems to be much more ambitious being an event-based system, and we saw some of the excellent reasons for that in the keynote speech. And it's based on an event bus, and I'm going to skip all of this. Oh, no, don't be scary, computer. I'm going to sit there and jump over this because I think that's all really been talked about in the keynote, about it being based on a message queue, event-based. But I'll just sit there and say, Suzy uses a lot of Salt. The Suzy admins are all based on Salt. Suzy QA, I think Richard's sitting at the back there. Yeah, he's waving at the back there. And Suzy QA, who always need a big thumbs up because they're what make our products actually work for you guys. Yeah. Suzy QA is very heavily investing in Salt. We saw on the keynote Suzy Manager putting heavy use of, and we hope that Suzy customers, Suzy users, open Suzy customers, open Suzy users all get to like Salt. So let's get on with what I'm actually supposed to be talking about. Sorry, a big digression. So what is a state execution module? You know, I was talking about this DSL that brings together these little modules. Well, these little modules are basically execution modules or state modules. And they're kind of interesting. We'll come to them a little bit later of the differences between them. But these are the things that manage the transitions on your computers. And these are what actually do the work that I mentioned earlier. So we'll skip past that slide. And mention upgrading packages as an example to split the difference between an execution module and a state module. So here we've got a little example in an SLS file that says, upgrade package up to date. So that's saying, hey, I'm going to use the package state to say that the packages should be up to date. And then here's an execution module version of it, which says, hey, use this special thing called module run, and then give the name of the thing that the module you want to run of package upgrade. Now, just written down as text files, they're much the same. But there's a difference. There's a critical difference. This will run and say it succeeded, and its output, or it threw an exception, and its output just comes back to you. Whereas this, you can do those requisites that were talked about in the previous talk, and that's really important advantage with states. And it can sit there and tell you, hey, I haven't changed anything. Anyway, why do we have execution modules? I think that became a little bit clear for some of us in the previous talk, because execution modules run on the Minion. They run on the remote node. And they're just simple Python methods that are exported into the salt names, into a salt namespace. They don't have to be idempotent. Now, this is a word that was bandied around earlier. Can I just ask, who is brave enough to say they don't understand the word idempotent? Well, good. There are a few people here. Idempotent is really a... Okay, I'm going to be shouted at if I get this wrong now. I'm a bit on the spot here. who disagrees with me when I say idempotent is to allow a function to be executed any number of times and the result come back the same? Have I got away with that? Yeah, okay. I think I've got away with that. So the basic idea is, if someone applies a configuration to your machine once or 1,000 times, the output should be the same. Yeah? Now, execution modules, you don't have to make them idempotent, but I think it's a good idea. Yes? And I'll come to why you don't have to later, but the general theory is you should try and apply the configuration to your machines that you're running one time or 1,000 times and get the same result. Because if you can do that, suddenly your life becomes really easy to manage a cluster. Because you can start steering things back when they get out of sync. Anyway, back to execution modules, because I'm going on a tangent here. They're really simple to develop, and we'll get onto that in a second. They're very simple to deploy. And basically, there's this magic directory on your master. Server salt is kind of your base environment, and then underscore modules. And you can just basically put a bunch of Python there, and it'll get zapped on to all of your minions when you run this magic call, which is a little bit more generic than you need to, but I put it in there because it's the one I use. So let's look a little bit more about some magic we've got to have in those Python files to make them distributable. Well, first we've got to give our execution module a name, so that we can actually call it in the DSL. I don't know if you'd noticed in all of those things, there was always a sort of namespace dot method, and that's how all of the salt lumps of modules, libraries, whatever we want to call them, work. So let's say a few more things. You probably read my slides before I've got around to saying them, but there's some really cool stuff done with this, because Salt made a really good engineering idea. Basically, you have a function, underscore, underscore, virtual, and then the return value of this is the name of the module. And this means that things like the package module actually decides, hey, what OS am I running on? If I'm running on SUSE, OpenSUSE, I'm going to run Zipper, because that's much better idea than running Yum on OpenSUSE. And similar for all the other platforms. So only the appropriate module for the appropriate platform is run. And that saves you as an admin or an operator or a developer having to deal with OS-specific issues, because that's part of the job of the configuration management system. And Salt's done a really nice, easy way for us to manage that. And that bit of code's stolen from my code, which I probably stole from the Salt documentation webpage. Sorry, guys. I should have accredited you. Anyway, so what methods can be exported? Basically, anything without an underscore. We're following a fairly standard Python. There's this little bit that I don't actually use, but I've noticed that you can actually export things within objects as long as there's no constructor, but I don't want to do this because it makes things more syntactically complicated to look at my code, so I don't do this. So try at your own risk. I haven't tested heavily. Now, here's another nice thing. I don't know how many of you are really good and put doc strings on all of your major exported functions. You should. And awesome. With Salt, when I make my execution modules or my state modules, just by putting the doc string in, I can then sit there and get that on the online help from Salt. So that's really nice. Okay, so here's where we're beginning to get to the end of what an execution module can do for you. No output structure rules. So it'll render YAML or JSON or whatever to the end user. So you can't sit there and make those conditionals on it. And so the only really way you can express that your execution module has failed is to raise an exception. That's perfectly reasonable from a programmer's perspective, but you realize you're going a little bit low-level in SALT. This is not really where you want to be doing to do a good professional job in making your sysadmins happy by making your extensions to SALT. So that's an interesting one. The other interesting one while you're developing execution modules and state modules is if you get the parameters wrong in any of your calling functions that are calling functions, that exception is swallowed by SALT and assumed to be a top-level error. So that one can catch you out a little bit. Logging. To make any sysadmin happy, you want to do your logging properly. I'm sure you, anyone who's been developing modules for or applications for deployment where someone else is looking after them and trying to see what went wrong later has told you off about logging if you're the person responsible for writing it. And SALT does the right thing. It uses Python's standard logging library. And you too can do this. Although it's a little bit confusing when you sit there and you're looking on the wrong machine for the log file that you thought you should have been running because you made a typo and... Be careful. The logs for your execution module end up exactly where they should do on the machine that ran your execution module. Distributed computing can get a little bit painful sometimes. Sorry, I'm going off on a tangent there. Wasted too much time making that mistake. So why are we on, I'm on to state modules. I think you've already got the hint that execution modules were maybe just a little bit too low level. But they're very much more user-friendly. They report what's changed. Okay, I didn't quite finish that page of the slide, but they express the series of operations to fulfill the state request. They have a standardized return value, so you can then do those conditionals. And state modules should have a test function, so you can sit there and say, actually, make this a no-op, but show me what you would have done. So, really, you want to get to a state module to make things pretty professional. So, each function that you export as a state module has a calling syntax and a return syntax. I don't know if these slides are going to be available afterwards. Okay, if they're available afterwards, I won't go through the details of that. But you can see, roughly, there's some details there. And you need to know those. And it's all documented upstream. So they're very, very similar to execution modules. They have the same namespace idea, so I thought I wouldn't bother showing the same slide twice with that nice function, underscore, underscore, virtual, underscore, underscore, where you express the function's name. The Python doc strings is exactly the same as the execution modules. That's nice. They're very simple to deploy, almost exactly the same as execution modules, but they sit under states. And again, I chose sync all because it syncs everything, and this sits there and it syncs the execution and the state modules to all of your nodes. So where are we now? Now, maybe I'm not right in saying this, but state modules must be idempotent, I think is a reasonable thing to say. Yeah, i.e. you must be able to run them 1,000 times and get the same answer. And no one will like you if they're not. That's my opinion about writing state modules. It basically makes the system predictable. It makes everyone's life easier. And I shouldn't bother reading out any more of that slide. So we've now got state modules, we've got execution modules. Why are we talking about both? Well, I'll get more to that later, but your state module can call an execution module, and by doing your execution module as a thing that's called by your state module, you know that your execution module covers all of the functionality that you need to do the state operations. So it's kind of a nice way of exposing the underlying system so that the user stroke admin of your module can debug it, and that's very useful. I'm kind of scared every time I look over in that corner with the original authors, because I've dared to say a lot here, and they haven't screamed at me yet, so maybe I'm doing okay. Anyway, I think that this is an interesting thing. With Ceph, we're really trying to make quite a big system. We've got lots of disks. Your machine may easily have 36 disks in it. And when you're doing things like querying each of the disks' partition tables, it can take quite a long time, and there's quite a lot of state gathered. So sometimes it might be a good idea to take out what you've done as an execution module, and you'll see that you've got a pretty well-behaved, standardized Python ordinary library. So maybe you should just package that library and call it from the state module and just wrap it very thinly in the execution module. Because then, when you're doing a very complicated operation in the state, like deploy Ceph, which may take 5 minutes to an hour on each machine, depending on how much it's got to do, and it may even just sit there and say it's a no-op and take less than a quarter of a second. And you want to encapsulate all of that. You don't want to sit there and query all of the disks all of the time. And with SALT, each operation starts up the sort of scope, so you might lose all of that information you've gathered in the process of doing a low-level operation. So it might be a good idea on some rare occasions when you're doing something as horrible as I've had to do with Ceph. Anyway, let's talk about Ceph, because it provides a good example of one of the worst cases that you'll ever come to, because it's a distributed storage system. If you had a distributed database, it would be equally bad, I'm sure. But I can't think of much more stateful things in the world than storage and databases. But Ceph's rather nice. It's better than all the storage systems I've dealt with. It's got key rings, it's got a monitor service, it's got OSDs, Rados gate. These are all interfaces. These are core state services. This is security. And if you look down, there's a nice simple dependency tree. So we've got the SALT master that instructs the state module on the minion to configure the service through the execution modules on the minion, which then configures the various services. And here's just a little diagram to say, I actually found that previous example was doing too much querying, so and too much losing of state, so I moved it into a Python library, and I just had that control via the configuration of Ceph via a Python library. So that's my own personal experience. I doubt you will have to do that optimization at all. So there are some things that I really hate about configuration management, and that is testing it. It's quite often best to have some raw machines to actually do a test cluster on. Functional tests are needed when you're sitting there trying to roll this out to third parties. Unit tests can get you so far, but you're quite often find yourself mocking everything. Now, SALT has a built-in testing framework, and I'm going to sit there and quiz these guys about it because I haven't delved into it yet, and I believe that there's quite a lot of work there. So I'm going to be finding out about that myself. What I have found useful, though, on Python libraries and the way I've been working things is to use PyTest. I've started mostly using PyTest rather than NoseTest. Tox, Python coverage, and these sort of tools, very good way for getting your unit tests to make your code production grade. So this is the question I kept avoiding. And I said, why execution and state modules? And I think I probably covered this slide by saying, think of execution modules as the primitives that the state modules is built upon. Think of them as, we don't have to be idempotent here, and that they're useful for debugging. Think of the state modules as higher level functions encapsulating the concept of what you're trying to do when you're writing this. So that's it for that section. And now just a few kind of more hand-wavy things that maybe everyone's going to scream at me for being lazy about. So when you have a function in Salt, you can have explicit arguments, you can have defaulted arguments, you can have positional arguments, and you can have keyword arguments. That's a lot of flexibility to shoot yourself in the foot with, particularly if you're going to try and make the API consistent over the long term. So this is my advice, and I expect to be shot down by some people because I may be not doing the right thing, but this is how it works for me so far. I like to use, I always call them keyword arguments, star, star, quags, I'm happy, whatever you want to call them. This is a Python thing where effectively you send a dictionary, other languages call them other things, like a map, into as a function parameter, and allows you to sit there and extend the potential calling variables over the lifetime of the API. And then I sit there and check this for missing arguments at that level rather than the API. And it allows me to throw clear error messages in this area. I find that this is useful generally in APIs because I don't like having do this one, do this two, and do this three as I'm developing and understanding what I'm doing. What I do like to do is sit there and say, hey, I might want to express the UUID of the cluster, or I might want to express the name of the cluster, and I might want to use one or the other to gather the former or the latter. So I quite like to use keyword arguments whenever I can and avoid having named explicit parameters and throw clear messages as errors in that way. So that's how I tend to do it. I will do whatever upstream asks me to when I try and upstream all of this work. So another little gotcha that happened to me. When SLS files processed and the important module, and then maybe start another module and then come back, then the scope is destroyed. So I did some memoization, which is a little term for saying remembering what I'd evaluated and returning it again the next time. And the memoization I was doing was which. Yes, because I didn't want to find in the system path the executable that I was calling each time. And I also wanted to throw a clear error whenever these executables weren't around. So it was just making things easier to support for the admin and making things faster for me as a tester and for me as a developer. And I got caught out because once I had evaluated that the file didn't exist, because of the scoping being destroyed so late in the system, I found that the which command was still returning that the file didn't exist even though the package had installed it. So be a little bit careful with putting things in global variables and optimizing too much in that way. Basically, Salt does something sane and the right thing for most people. But don't try and be too smart sometimes, is what I learned from that one. So here's my take-home summary. I'm sorry if it's been too basic for some of you. I hope it's been useful for the people who've never come to configuration management. But 90% of your work is very, very easy. You want to play with these tools. They will make your life better. Do not forget this part. This is the most important message. The benefits are immense. Yeah? Susie's recommending Salt. We're chucking it into all our products. I've heard the word, it's creeping its tentacles into everything. Everything is turning salty at Susie. In a really good way. Really. This is good news. This is really a step forward. So most of it, what you want from a configuration management system is simply install your packages, configure your files, and start your services. That'll get you most of where you want to go for most things. It's that simple. So on my kind of like extending Salt talk, most of you won't need to do this. And when you do need to do it, it's probably for your own person, your own company that you're working in has a specific service that you need to do something funky. Most of the time you can get away with just calling command line files. But if you do need to do it, it's just Python. It's really easy. Salt's really well designed for extending. Pretty much everything I've said there is all you need to know. And you realize most of my talk was telling you you should be using Salt. You should be using a configuration management system. It wasn't on the topic, because it's that easy. So, last point, if you're going to do this, please, please, please remember all functions should be idempotent. And I think we now all accept we know what idempotent means. So that's the end of my talk. I'm happy to take any questions. I hope I haven't upset the original authors of Salt. Please ask me questions, easy ones, hard ones, whatever you like.
Okay, I will come back to the topic of idempotence. I think I would discuss it once with you. Salt has two types of modules. So you have the state modules, which already are, by definition, idempotent. So you, if you have, for example, a package install function, it will first do an rpm-q to query the package is there, and then it will install it. On the other hand, the package install function will, if you try to install the same package twice, it will probably fail the second time because it will just raise the error from RPM just to the surface. Still, I kind of disagree that we have to make the execution modules idempotent for a simple reason. One is you can call from the command line state data in the same way you call an execution module. And the second thing is, so it will be just having two ways of doing the same thing. And then on the second part is you were worried about the performance problems of doing which twice. But now if we have to propagate RPM-Q calls all over the place every time you want to install a package, that means that every execution of an execution module will start to do more stuff to test if it has to do it or not. And that if you do a state run on Salt, you will see that this checking is an important part of the execution time. So, yeah, just that.
I think that's really useful feedback. Possibly I could have saved myself some time by not making things so idempotent at the executable layer. Maybe that's the best advice. But I came in going, I want things idempotent first. And then, I've got to learn Salt as well. So maybe that was a mistake on my part. Can I hand it over to one of the original authors of Salt and get his reaction to that? Because I'm being lazy.
There are situations where you definitely do want to make idempotent execution modules. There's nothing wrong with making an idempotent execution module, but just as was stated, the whole idea of the execution modules, and I can say this quite authoritatively because it was my idea, was that it's a grab bag of functionality, that it's a system that allows us to just to create a giant, like you say, low-level API to manage the actual systems. And so I'm going to agree with you and disagree with you in just saying that, yes, there are a lot of cases where making idempotent execution modules is a good idea. But also, it makes a lot of sense to go ahead and make the functions that you need to generate idempotency in your execution modules, and that's okay. And again, the big idea behind the execution modules is, yeah, that they're just open, that they can be just, and as you said, just anything that you'd like. And for the record, I think that's probably the only thing that I would even mildly disagree with you on your presentation. Very well done. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Make me feel a little bit humbled there. Any more questions? Okay, I hope I haven't run a bit too short, but thank you very much.